Hello and welcome to AFBT Comics Podcast, episode 77. My name is David Brook and I'm here with Forrest Hollingsworth. He is the coolest, he is the greatest, he is in Washington State.
All factually true. Hello, my name is Forrest with two R's. I'm excited to talk about comics after we get past some unpleasantries.
Yeah, so this is the comics podcast where we recap the news every week. We review the top books and we look ahead to the comics coming out the following week. This week we have special guests on. They are the writers of Primer, a new DC Comics OGN by Thomas Krajewski and Jennifer Murrow. And if you hold on later in the show, we'll be doing an interview with them, and it's pretty cool actually. We get into, you know, storytelling, creating a brand new character, being asked by DC Comics to create a brand new character, and what that's like. And Forrest and I both read the book. It's quite good.
I loved it. Super cute, super charming, good multi-generational storytelling. I liked it a lot, as is the standard for the industry. I was not able to join the interview because of when it was scheduled. And so I am looking forward to listening to it.
Let me know how I did.
I will.
What Forrest was alluded to earlier, though, is the news. Every show we start with the news, and this week probably the biggest news of the week was quite depressing, quite sad.
Yes. Frustrating.
Several women have come out making claims of misconduct and grooming by specific creators. We'll probably just be talking about one that was named on the show this week.
I think there's a reasonable case to be made for the two that were outed this week, although there have been attempts to out them previously.
That's true.
Those being Cameron Stewart, who worked on like the Batgirl of Burnside book, Seaman with Grant Morrison, some others, and then, of course, Warren Ellis, who I think doesn't really need an introduction.
I don't want to necessarily name names or anything. If you go to Twitter and you, if you're tapped in at all with the comics community, you'll see, I think it's good. You'll see a lot of creators coming out, calling out the injustice, saying they believe these women, but also that we need to do better, especially men in the industry need to do better.
Yeah, and I would say that a lot of those statements that you will find are from women and queer and marginalized people who have had bad experiences in the industry because of these men and because of the environment that these men perpetrate. And I definitely would like to call on, you know, male colleagues, men in comics, to kind of call this shit out more, for sure, as well.
Yeah, and I saw one, I forget who tweeted it, but one female creator, you know, pointed out, you know, if you're a male in the industry, think about what's happened to you in the past, how you've been around certain things. Did you react the correct way? You might not have, you know, noticed it at the time, but if you think back, you might actually remember cases where this stuff happened.
Yeah, and I think that that's the ultimate takeaway from the conversation. It's a very strange industry in that pretty much everyone's a freelancer. You know, there's no union or global HR office or anything to provide avenues for reporting and provide avenues for support and resources and things like that. And that's very frustrating, especially when editors, EICs, industry heads across the industry either don't acknowledge these things or intentionally protect abusers. I think it's a very important reckoning for us that seems to happen every once in a while to say, step back and listen to these women, believe these women, call this shit out when you see it, and do the best that you can to remove yourself, I think primarily from the enjoyment of their work, and then also from the industry, however you're able to.
Yeah, we talked about, Forrest and I talked about this earlier in the week when it was, you know, still kind of coming out, and, you know, I think we both agree if comic creators could unionize, since they are so siloed, there's like there's no one to go to, one specific person or company to go to, right? Because like,
and
you
it's difficult to create a trusting relationship between people that you think you can go to,
right?
You know, it, especially at DC, but at other publishers as well. Editors do have a history of ignoring these things because those creators are good sellers, or they're critically acclaimed or commercially acclaimed, or they want to keep an artist's Rolodex or whatever, and all these contacts that power the industry and that abusers use intentionally to survive in the industry. And so I think that unionization is not a one-stop solution, but I definitely do think it would help.
So it's still early yet. We're recording the show on Wednesday, actually, so we haven't, as of this recording, Cameron Stewart, Warren Ellis, they have not responded to these allegations.
Neither, yeah.
Bleeding Cool did report on Wednesday that DC Comics is canceling a book that Cameron Stewart was planned, or not yet scheduled, but actually already working on.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Marazzo came out and said a variant cover that Cameron Stewart was supposed to do is canceled, and the money is going to the charity Safe Horizon instead. So,
yeah.
You know, there has been some action, and I mean, it's only Wednesday, so it's only been about 48 hours. So maybe more will come out between now and when the show actually goes live. But
yeah, very possible. I think that a lot of this stuff has been moving very quickly, and I think for the first time in a really long time, I want to say in a good direction. Mm-hmm. Like that action taken by DC is much faster than previous issues,
right?
And that's good. And I've also seen, obviously, a lot of industry folks speaking out about it. I will say that I don't believe that the burden of proof should be on the victim at all in any cases. But there are quite a few threads of credible information and evidence that you can find easily on Twitter if you'd like to follow up on these women's accounts and support them, which I think is very, very important.
Right. I'm sure we'll be reporting on this and talking about this on future shows, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I could undo any recommendations that I've ever given for these men's work or any accolades I've given them, I gladly would. I regret that I did not know about this previously, but it's important that the same for anyone else feeling that way that you act now.
For sure. Hard turn to the next bit of news, but I'm going to try. Ready?
Transition.
If you act now, you can react to our next bit of news, which is X of Swords officially gets a release schedule, and it's going to contain 24 issues.
And a handbook, a complimentary handbook.
That's way more than I thought, because
many. I think it has doubled in size since the original solicit.
Which could be because of the pandemic and creators kind of putting pens down and people rethinking it, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, if you don't know, X of Swords is the first big X-Men event with Jonathan Hickman at the helm of X-Men. It was supposed to start in July. It's now shipped to September. Mm-hmm. After that information came out, actually most of this information that we found out about this was from C2E2, where Ari Bard, AIPT Comics writer, did some great reporting and actually live reporting at the panel for this panel. And trickling out, we kind of knew that there was going to be three issues, each one called X of Swords. But this new master list has come out, revealing September is prelude issues, and then the first two chapters, and then October and November we get all the rest of the chapters up to 22, which will be contained in Excalibur, Cable, X-Men, Hellion, basically all the X-Men books.
Mm-hmm.
So my first question to you, Forrest,
sure,
about this news: will this be in one massive omnibus eventually, or will it be collected in multiple chapters?
So I guess I think if you look at what the X Office has been doing, which is putting out those trades that are waves of the book,
yeah,
like the Dawn of X Wave 1, mm-hmm, Dawn of X Wave 2, they've also been collecting them separately, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason that they would change it up for the event.
Yeah, probably not. It's interesting. It seems like they want to just continue on with that. So what mm-hmm. they'll probably do is do like X of Swords Volume 1, X of Swords.
Yeah, and that's my preferred way of reading it, because you have all the material for the event and crossovers and stuff there. It's all collected in one.
But then they're going to still release the X-Men Volume whatever 4.
Oh yeah, totally.
The side.
Absolutely, because some people only want to follow the individual book, and I hope that they've done a good job of making it coherent for folks that don't mm-hmm. want to read Marauders and Hellions and whatever other books too, if they only like X-Men, the mainline title, which is a totally valid way to read.
Sure.
I do think that office has done a very good job of compiling things and making them coherent in the past. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
One other thing revealed was the subtitles for X of Swords. Or is it uh-huh. Ten of Swords? Damn it.
I have no idea.
The first issue is Creation, then it's Stasis, then it's Destruction.
Okay.
Cool. So,
and they are kind of emulating the 22 cards of the Arcana deck.
Oh, okay.
The tarot deck. So, there are certain key issues that I saw folks picking up on across Twitter over the last couple days. Like, oh, this issue would be the Executioner. This one would be the Fool. And that's kind of interesting. Yeah. They have structured it that way. That's really, really cool.
And whoever called that out the first time, they deserve accolades.
Yeah.
In our next bit of news, Image and Marvel Comics are soliciting books with the Back the Comeback labels. These are the labels that Diamond has come up with to, I don't know, create an event out of coming back, I guess?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know what you call it, because it's like, hey, let's celebrate the fact that comics were canceled for 2 months and now they're back. But let's not put the label on the books until a couple weeks into being back. Also.
COVID collectibles.
It just seems so, I don't know, slapdash, weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that'll be happening, what, in September?
Yeah, I think that these are the first books that have been solicited by publishers in relation to, I know some comic retailers and stores and stuff, and obviously Steve Jeppy have been wearing shirts and have posters have been up for a while. Image was the first to actually solicit books with the Back the Comeback label, and then Marvel followed suit with some Empire variants, and then also their own variants, which say in comic stores on Wednesday. Just a little bit of a shot at DC. But yeah, these are the first tangible items that are coming out for customers.
I saw Mitch Gerads calling out those Wednesday covers and saying that could have been work for an artist.
That's true.
But then
that's totally true.
Fabian Nietzsche was like, or how do you pronounce his name? The creator of Deadpool there?
Yeah.
He was like, oh, these covers wouldn't even exist. It's no big deal. Another Twitter spot to read.
I can't imagine anyone being hyped to buy those covers except for as an oddity, which maybe they're banking on. It doesn't matter what day comics come out. Who cares?
Right. I mean, most people probably don't even go to the store necessarily on Wednesday.
No.
I mean, that's the middle of the week.
I mean, yeah. Wednesday warriors that are speculating probably do, but then you have most people have like a pull list and they pick things up even monthly.
Yeah, that's true.
Who cares?
Indeed. Who cares indeed? Why even talk about it on the show? next up in our news, convention news, sad. ECCC, Keystone Comic Con, and PAX have canceled their conventions, and they're shifting to digital events similar to San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, so these are all Read Pop events. They've kind of canceled their entire convention wave now. These are the stragglers or things that have been tentatively rescheduled in the case of Emerald City. Mm-hmm. Totally expected. Some of them are shifting to digital panels and fan events. And I think the last time that Emerald City was scheduled, they also did like live watch throughs of superhero movies on Twitter, like live tweeting the movie.
Yeah.
So there's some attempts at emulating that community experience from the conventions, but a lot of them have just said, hey, we're taking a knee. We'll try it in 2021.
I'm hoping these conventions learn, you know, some things about how to pull these off, because I've only heard so-so things about other conventions that have tried this so far.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, we've all been on a Zoom call at this point, and they are
a lot
chaotic. Yeah, they're loud. Usually you can't chime in when you want to, if at all.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It's interesting. It's not what I get out of the convention experience.
Right.
Like when I'm at a convention, I'm not seeking out the hottest news. I would if I were in the capacity of reporting for AIPT, but big reveals and that kind of stuff, I've never queued up for like a big announcement.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more about the community aspect. So that is obviously more difficult to emulate online, though I don't fault these folks for trying. It's the best thing that they have.
Right. And they're usually a couple days too, right?
Sometimes Comic-Con's, you know, panels have been pre-recorded or sessions have been pre-recorded, and you can like buy access to those. So that makes sense too.
Right. Like San Diego Comic-Con is going to be the usual July 22nd to July 26th. And that's a lot. I mean, people aren't going to sit online for 20 hours.
Right.
Over that. If anything, that's a good question, actually. Will someone like log in for like 10 minutes, get bored, leave, come back the next day?
Probably.
See, this is where I think DC Fandome, got it right in that DC announced that on August 22nd, they will be hosting a free virtual comics, TV, and movie experience. They're combining all of the DC Comics, HBO Max, all those TV shows, and all the Warner Bros. Movies that are coming, like Wonder Woman, into one mega event. And what's the director of Guardians of the Galaxy? What's his name? Tim Gunn? No, John Gunn. No, Jim Gunn.
James Wait. Gunn.
Damn! So close. He was tweeting about how he's really excited about this.
Oh, and, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Oh, well, Suicide Squad.
Right.
Exactly. I was like, why? That makes sense.
I think reducing it to 24 hours makes sense. It also creates a sense of urgency. Like, I got to get in on that at some point today or whatever, mm-hmm. that day.
Yeah.
And DC's come out and said that they will have, like, appearances by actors, directors from all their movies and TV shows.
Yeah, it's
like
very film and TV forward, for yep. sure, all the things that they're marketing. But that's cool. I would love to see a panel about the new season of Doom Patrol. That kind yep. of stuff I would definitely tune in for. Especially, I think that they've got some new energy behind that with their partnership with HBO.
Right.
So they
right.
may have some very interesting new things to tease, some new projects, and they seem to be cohering into a much better direction than they have been previously. Mm-hmm. I also like that they are kind of taking the route of when Nintendo stopped doing E3 presentations and they just started doing their pre-recorded directs.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you have a Nintendo Switch and all you care about is what's coming out for Nintendo Switch, you can tune into that. This right. is kind of the same experience for DC fans, rather than what I think like Emerald City and PAX might try to do, which is sandwich something that you like between two things that you don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're going to get that turnover where people are leaving and then coming back to different sessions.
Right. Yeah, DC's
going to have them locked in.
That's the thing. You have a pro con to it too, right? Like, let's pretend San Diego Comic-Con's virtual thing had... We knew there were going to be big reveals from Marvel, DC, everybody.
Sure.
You're going to get an audience that's Marvel, potentially just Marvel fans that are going to hang around for that Aquaman news. But now, if you've got a fan who only cares about Marvel Studios stuff, they may not enter this fandom and experience the Jim Lee
talking
points. No, I mean,
they won't. But also, it's a good way for DC to engage with their community and speak directly to their community in kind of an appreciative way.
That's true.
I guess that's yeah. the opposite side of it. And it, as they call it in, I think mostly the video game industry, get all those activations.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I really wonder if San Diego Comic-Con is like totally screwed with, you know, we already know Disney already has the D12 event, although
yeah.
it's probably
yeah,
canceled.
But if you look at what's happening with E3, I think that the same thing's going to happen with San Diego.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, but also maybe overall good for the industry.
Right. I mean, being siloed is always kind of a bad... It's like almost like the monopolies are taking the convention scene by mm-hmm. storm.
Yeah. But good production, good events, big announcements that generate their own entire day of news.
Yeah.
Inspires other publishers to do that as well.
Right.
Which may be a net gain. I don't know. That now way, I sound like I'm advocating for the marketplace of ideas, which fuck yeah. that shit. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, basically Warner Bros. Can manage the message that they're trying to deliver in a single day.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than Marvel topping them with some big news and then they taking over.
Yeah. And now there's a place for them all to kind of have an equal voice and to compete on those grounds too.
And also meld their content into one as HBO Max mm-hmm. has its own comics. Say what? That's right. DC Comics released 3 digital free comics this week for everyone to read. And they feature the characters Hector, Brian, and Olivia.
Yes.
What's that spell?
Hubbo.
Almost. Close. HBO is, together they form HBO, and they are going to the max. These series, this 3-issue series is called To the Max.
So we've got Miss Marvel on the Olivia cover. We've got yes. Ironheart on the Brian cover. And we've got, I think, either Iron Man or Exo Manowar on the Hector cover.
Yeah, I go with Exo Manowar.
Although that one, that cover, the Hector one, is cover art by Jim Lee.
Yeah.
So,
Impressive.
Kind of all in on it. I do like that the press release that we have up on the website says Hector, Brian, and Olivia, and then in parentheses HBO, as if capitalizing and highlighting the first letters of their names wasn't enough.
I know, they really wanted to hammer that home.
Big shades of the Marvel Axe Comics deal. Mm-hmm. We goofed on those Axe Comics books and names for quite a while. I think they were called the Freshmen.
Yeah, something like that.
But I got 3 months out of Marvel Unlimited out of that, so whatever.
It's totally worth it. Yeah. You know, it's funny is that when I saw this Olivia cover, I was like, oh my god, they're ripping off Amanda Connor. And then I go and see, oh wait, Amanda Connor drew the cover of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they got her Jorge Jimenez.
Those might have been lucrative deals for those folks. That'd be very cool and good for them.
Yeah, a little HBO Max money.
Comics has always had this weird symbiotic relationship with advertisers. If you look at like Pizza Hut and Taco Bell comics, and then like even like the X-Men pizza that has a giant line of cheese down the middle of it with different toppings across it and stuff. There's always things like this happening. HBO is a maybe higher tier of content and quality than you normally see associated with comics, but there's totally avenues for this to take place anyway. It's all very silly. It's all very dumb, and it'll be over in a couple months.
Right.
If not,
can I ask you a question?
When these issues were released.
Yes. I noticed on the press release, to the max. Why is the capitalized?
The max is a proper noun.
Oh, okay.
If they mean
the max,
it's a place called the Max, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, that shows how deeply I've looked.
Although maybe that's the new vernacular. Maybe that's what they're trying to say. Do you check out the new episode of Doom Patrol on the Max?
The Max. Oh man. Yo, you want to get on the Max? Jesus, it's like, I don't know. It feels very 80s to me.
It's all very silly.
Next up,
but not in a harmful way.
Vault Comics also partnering with someone. They're partnering with Heavy Metal to sell their merch and comics on the Heavy Metal website.
Mm-hmm.
Complete with this partnership is new cover art. If you haven't read The Savage Shores or Wasted Space, you can get brand new cover art in your comics, which is kind of cool. And they've got this broken down VHS box style art, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I assume this is a win-win for Vault.
It's got to be. Obviously, yeah. I don't know how many subscribers Heavy Metal has right now.
Yeah.
It's a prestige format, but I know that there are folks that are really endeared to it. I've been very endeared to Heavy Metal and 2000 AD for a very long time.
Yeah.
Aside from like Hellboy, those were kind of the first comics that I really got into, maybe too young of an age. But I have a soft spot for them and a great fondness for them. So Vault is channeling that, and it seems marketed to me, and that's cool.
I'm sure this is going to help them like stay afloat too if they have some downtimes, because obviously they're going to be sharing the profits with Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it did come as a bit of a surprise, since a lot of these other indie publishers like Aftershock haven't necessarily made a move like this.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it speaks of Heavy Metal being more interested in Vault. Too. Oh,
could be.
I mean,
yeah, that's true.
They have great critical success.
Right.
At the very least. So that's it's very cool.
You know, it's not a surprise. Norman Osborn is going to be back in Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man number 850. It's going to be an anthology issue, extra size, of course. And Nick Spencer and Ryan Otley are bringing Norman Osborn, a.k.a. Green Goblin, back to fight Spider-Man, even though he just got defeated by Spider-Man in number 800, I think, Dan Slott's last issue,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I saw on Twitter a lot of people were mad, because he's like, he actually never really left. He's been in other stories. So it was a kind of a weird way to market this.
It is weird. And it was also tied to like a new advertisement for Kindred.
Mm-hmm.
It was some blue text on a red background, and I almost think that it's a misdirect.
Like, you think Kindred is Norman Osborn?
Yeah, that they were implying it, and it seemed so obvious that it must be some sort of misdirect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, unfortunately, terribly interested in the current Spider-Man book. It's actually a major bummer in my life, you know, I'm on board to find out who and what Kindred is eventually. And I kind of like the idea of just playing around with all these obvious red herrings for a bit.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and also don't drag this shit out. If you want to, like, surprise us.
It's been too long.
Way too long.
Yeah. But there's always a goblin. There's always a spider.
Next. Exactly. We're used to these things repeating.
Yeah.
I saw Saladin Ahmed tweeting about how excited he is for his story.
Oh, that's cool.
He introduced a new Falcon character to check out. Already been introduced, but he's going to be focusing on that character in the story. Trad Moore is also doing a story, as well as Kurt Busiek and Chris Bachalo.
Trad Moore should have been Eisner Award nominated.
True.
For his work on a book with Alice Cott, I think that would have qualified. And then also, obviously, Silver Surfer Black.
Right. Yeah, he's epic. Okay, next up. Marvel's The Pull List revealed a bunch of new books. We already talked about X of Swords, Ten of Swords, whatever of Swords.
We haven't even floated the idea of Cross of Swords.
Oh, no, not Cross of Swords. Like a train crossing?
Or Key of Swords.
Well, in that same news, they also reveal Black Widow number one coming out, even though I've seen it in hand at different comic shops across the country, because somehow it's sort of shipped somewhere.
Yeah, it got released early. We had that on the show a bit ago. It got released early, and they were like, This isn't coming out with the movie anymore. We haven't rescheduled the movie. Don't leak anything from it. But here it is.
Yeah.
Very weird. Very strange. They're just doing a soft relaunch for that, which makes sense.
Shang-Chi by Jing Lun Yang is now coming out in September. It was supposed to come out, I think, in July.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the podcast episode where I interviewed Jean, we talk a little bit about that. Juggernaut is also resolicited for September. This one was a bit of a surprise that it hadn't showed up yet, but here it is. And then Marvel Zombies by Philip Kennedy Johnson. You know, just having Philip Kennedy Johnson attached to that makes me want to read it real bad.
Can I tell you which one I feel that way about?
Which one?
Immortal She-Hulk number one, written by Al Ewing. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Al Ewing is going to kill it. So, I don't know. Did we have this news on the thing? So Immortal Hulk number 50 is going to be the last issue.
Yes, Joe Bennett said in an interview recently.
Now, this is obviously an Empire tie-in, but I wonder if this will tie into... It has to be tying into what he's doing on Immortal Hulk.
Yeah, this is a one-shot for Empire where Jen is getting the Immortal Hulk treatment, which I think Jason Aaron is a competent writer. I have liked and equally disliked issues of his Avengers run. I don't think he writes Jen terribly well. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing her through a different lens, especially maybe the best comic of the last 5 years at least.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
We might all be saying the same thing about Dr. Doom, since his eyes are nominated. I've only dipped a little bit into it. I haven't read every issue, but number 7's coming out September as well. Also in the news, Ascender and Descender have been optioned for TV. Jeff Lemire can't lose.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wonder how many projects he has floating around now.
I know, right? I mean, quite it probably like, goes all the way back to his first OGNs.
Yeah.
But this is great news for Image Comics too, because it brings more awareness to their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just last week, we talked about Jupiter's Circle? Is it Jupiter's Circle? Yeah. By Mark Millar and Frank Quitely.
Oh, isn't it called something like Jupiter Rising?
Yeah, Jupiter Rising. Jupiter's Circle is the sequel to it.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
It's pretty good.
I know Jupiter Ascending.
You mean the greatest film of all time?
I haven't seen it. So Canada's Lark Productions acquired the exclusive television rights to both Descender and its sequel Ascender. Fortunate Son producer Lark which is part of the NBC Universal International Studios, is developing and producing the series. Jeff Lemire's down. Also got Black Hammer. The Black Hammer universe is out there. Gideon Falls. I know that there are others. He's got almost 10 film or screen projects out there.
Robert Downey Jr. is going to be producing Sweet Tooth.
Sweet Tooth, yep. So a surefire hit. I think he's wading into the film production industry, and I think that could be very, very cool, especially if he's given significant creative control over these projects.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it probably varies depending on the projects, too.
Yeah.
Also in the news, Marilyn Manson, who I swear to God was like in the news when I was like still in high school, middle school.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely.
DC Comics has released a Marilyn Manson music video tied to Dark Knight's death metal. And the song is called Worship My Wreck. Worship My Wreck. That's right. Not worship. Worship. Sorry. I sound like an old man. if you checked out the music video, you can see the link on AFGComics.com. It's also on YouTube. It's a lot of pretty good CGI. And
it's got a look.
Yeah. It's kind of arty. It's kind of cartoony, but also, I don't know, it's weird. It's interesting. It features the Batman who laughs and Batman, I guess, in a fight of sorts. But Batman who laughs is basically doing bad things, evil things. Mm-hmm.
The most I have liked Marilyn Manson of recent was he was a song that he wrote for the first John Wick, wherein Willem Dafoe dies. That's a good scene and a good song.
Nice. If you go to the website dcdeathmetal.world, it says the original soundtrack coming soon. Yeah. So I assume there are more songs. I don't know if they're all by Marilyn Manson.
Probably. I don't think Marilyn Manson comes cheap. I wouldn't think that. I would still imagine that he charges a pretty high price. So
yeah.
Probably not all by him.
No. I know that they did a soundtrack last time they did metal, the first metal event. Mm. And I think it was a hit, so it makes sense that they would have this.
I generally like when creators put out even Spotify playlists.
It's fun. Adds a mood.
You kind of get an idea of, it's neat back matter. You get an idea of where they were, what they were listening to, whatever, when they created the book, or what they think draws out the themes of the book, stuff like that. It's very fun.
In our last bit of news, which is the last news we could get on Wednesday... Marvel Comics is teasing Empire Aftermath Avengers number 1 by Al Ewing and Valerio Schiti. This is coming out in September. It's clearly an epilogue of sorts to Empire, which is hilarious because it hasn't started yet and we're getting, you know, kind of like a ending kind of issue.
Mm-hmm.
Already teased. But in the cover art by Jim Chung, we see Hulkling amongst other characters. He looks kind of happy. And they're probably going to be filling in these characters as the week goes on.
Over time, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't they do that? I think they did that with the Hellions cover.
Yes, they did. Yeah, to figure out who was on the team.
That's a fun trick.
It is. I'm not sure how you're supposed to feel, because we don't know. This is apparently giving us some sort of details about what happens after issue number 4 of Empire, which isn't going to be for a couple of weeks.
Right.
So I don't have any skin in the game. Like, I don't know why I would care who is around Hulkling right now, but
yeah,
it's Marvel getting back to what they used to do on a weekly basis.
Event Comics gonna event comic.
Yep. And AIPT Comics Podcast gonna talk about top books of the week. Top books of the week. Did I do that right? Damn it.
Sure.
All right, we're going to talk about our top 2 favorite comics out last week. And Forrest, what was your second favorite book of the week?
So I can't believe I'm saying this. My second favorite book of the week was Dark Knight's Death Metal number 1, written by Scott Snyder with art by Greg Capullo. This book was surprisingly more coherent and interesting than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. There's a very good double splash page in about the middle of the issue where Wally West is talking with Wonder Woman, and it gives a much better mission statement for metal and for the idea of the anti-crisis than I think a lot of other metal and metal adjacent books have done in the past. There's this clarity of purpose that DC has conjured, maybe in the absence of 5G, around a lot of these aesthetic elements and then also various character arcs that cohere into something that actually interested me. And I think that that's difficult to do with a lot of chess pieces on the board right now. Thousands of Batman, Wonder Woman, Last Night on Earth, Swamp Thing, Batman Who Laughs, Perpetua. It's a very, very difficult to get all those various pieces into one thing that works well, but I thought that this book surprisingly did that. It has a really long tail, so I don't know if it's going to sustain that over the next 8 or 9 months that we're reading it, but the narrative thrust was interesting, it was concise, and then there were really cool over-the-top aesthetics stapled onto it. The scripting and artwork complement each other pitch perfectly, and when Greg Capullo gets to draw cool shit, he gets to draw cool shit.
Oh, for sure.
You know, invisible chainsaws, exploding men, and those sorts of things. It's very interesting. It's very silly and over the top and fun in a way that I liked. And I would like to make it clear that I don't actually dislike Scott Snyder or Greg Capullo very much at all. I know that the shows or the previous conversations we've had about it makes it seem like I do, but I think that they're very, very talented creators from a narrative perspective, from a dialogue perspective, and then obviously from a visual perspective, but that they often need better editors, and that DC has done a poor job of giving them structure or parameters to perform inside of, so things just kind of end up spinning off of the top in various directions that get dead ends and stuff. And it seems like everyone has kind of sat down, had a conversation, and realized that, and honed this into something that I'm legitimately interested in.
Nice. Hear, hear.
What about you?
Well, that was also my second favorite book of the week. I give it a 9 out of 10 in my review on AMPTComics.com.
Not bad.
Pretty high, pretty high. I was struggling a bit with how silly, crazy, wild some of the ideas, fun the ideas are, mixed with very like complex, deep explanatory scenes where we're understanding that like the entire multiverse is at threatened right now, and there are very specific pieces that need to be used and moved around to fix things. And I was at first struggling with the fact, like, is all the fun, crazy stuff just window dressing to prop up the really complex stuff that's actually going to do a lot to fix DC Comics and their multiverse?
Yeah.
Or was it a perfect blend to, you know, not bore us, but also at the same time entertain us?
Uh-huh.
So at the end of it all, I thought there were some impressive things being done. Like, for instance, there's a page where there are captions that build up towards these old characters that are now underground and they rise up later on.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of sets it up in a narrative way and in prose, and then hits us over the head with visuals.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like challenges the reader to approach the comic a little bit differently than a conventional superhero comic.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that they're talking about very big concepts and trying to boil them down into iconography, which can be really difficult, and it can be very difficult to make set pieces coherent and individual action scenes coherent when you have that big of ideas stapled to them. I don't think it's going to be entirely successful, but this first issue,
It definitely reads like Capullo and Snyder are like kind of getting sick of writing superhero comics,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, let's just throw everything out the window.
Yeah,
do everything.
I don't want to spoil it right now, but I was talking to you off air about things related to that, and specifically about Perpetua, that I think we should check on in a couple issues.
Right. Honestly, I can't wait for them to go to Marvel. It's going to happen eventually. They're going to go to Marvel, and they're going to blow us away. They're going to take over a line, hopefully.
Yeah.
Like, I bet you, like, they could, like, fix the Fantastic Four or
something
like that.
I mean, I think
like
it would be really interesting if they came over and just did some incredibly weird shit like Orlando's doing with Darkhold.
Yeah.
Just resurrect something that hasn't been touched in a really long time, that's tailored to them.
For sure.
And also, please, can they do a Judge Dredd book first?
That would be dope. I don't know if IDW could afford them.
Maybe not.
So what was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week was Wind, number one, written by James Tynion IV, with art by Michael Dialnes. And I thought that this was endearing. So it obviously has some very obvious seams, because it was originally structured as an OGN, and it's, you get that out of it, right? They kind of throw you into the deep end of this weird world. Everyone has silly names, and they're using a lot of proper nouns and that sort of stuff, so that all of that stuff is there, and I think that it's something that James struggles with occasionally, but also the character building, the world, the art, all this stuff, it's very endearing and sweet and interesting with this undercurrent of darkness, mixed emotions, and genuine anguish that I think will propel the narrative forward in a very interesting way. It actually reminded me a lot of Netflix's Hilda, Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that. No.
Okay. So it's as of right now, there's only one season about this girl who goes kind of on an adventure when her home is destroyed by a giant.
Oh, no.
In this, like, modern meets fantasy world that reminded me a lot of Wind, actually. It balances this light silliness and funniness, like a woman saying, telling Wind, the main character, to take a shower because he smells like grease. And he says, I'll do that later. And she says, oh, child, don't lie to me. And he says, okay. It's just very funny. And Tinian knows that's funny and writes it to be funny. It's this kind of endearing childishness to it, but then also kind of probing the darkness of this world that everyone's living on top of, and setting this up with kind of a banger of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I'm very interested. They were on the show last week, and they talked a little bit about, you know, world building and creature creation. I highly recommend you go back and listen to it. It's quite cool. Mm-hmm. It got me even more excited for what's to come. Actually, I think they spoil a little bit of what's to come.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I really liked it too. It is gay.
It's very gay, and I liked that.
You know, the extra size, too, it feels like it can breathe a little bit compared to a 22 issue book.
Totally.
It takes its time with its scenes. So if you, you know, get frustrated with comics and how they can be, you know, too quick or too slow, this feels like a nice...
Much better paced, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I definitely think, over time, I'm realizing that my preferred way of reading is OGNs.
Yeah.
I got significantly more out of, say, Upgrade Soul than I do Stringing Together Thoughts. My life happens in between individual issues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes I'll sit down and completely reread Venom, and that's interesting, and I get more out of it than I did when I was reading them the weeks that they were coming out. But also sometimes I just want to take a day and read Upgrade Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Wind is obviously structured that way, though Boom and the creators have made the decision to split it up. And I find that much more immediately enriching.
Yeah, for sure. You get like an experience.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you sit and you have like 20 minutes to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Rather than 10 minutes with a single issue.
And the innate pleasure that comes out of knowing the creators got to take their time.
Right. Yeah, Michael, I think, told us on the show last week that Wint is a 2-year project.
Wow. Yeah, right. And it shows.
Yep. I wanted to put Wind as my number one issue, but I had to go with Ant-Man number 5 by Zeb Wells and Dylan Burnett. This is a series that I jumped onto midway through. Last issue felt like it was all set up for the finale, which is number 5 this week. And I wasn't disappointed. I really, really love how Wells is writing the Scott Lang and his daughter, their relationship in the book. She's kind of an up-and-coming superhero. And they basically fight giant gross bugs.
Okay.
They're in the Savage Land. The whole world is at stake here. And his daughter, Cassie, rushes forward and saves the day. Or does she? Maybe with a little help from her father. So I think this is a book like any father, daughter, or father and son could read together and really enjoy. Burnett's art is just so, so cool looking. The colors by Mike Spencer really spruce it up too, and they make this world feel different than any conventional superhero book. And there's some fun twists and turns. Scott Lang gets to do something that I don't know if any Ant-Man prior has done or pulled off. And it's just a deeply satisfying finale. And yeah, I highly recommend it.
So this is the final issue?
Yeah, it's digital only.
Oh, right.
Yeah, okay. It's one of the digital only issues. So yeah. It says the end. It could extend, but it does say the end on the second to last page. Because there is an epilogue. Oh, can I spoil the epilogue?
No. No.
It's a certain Spider-Man character villain. I'll tell you later.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read it now. You got me on the hook.
Good. Nice. Yeah, it's going to be really good when you read it in trade, I think.
Cool. Yeah.
Issue 4, I was like, because it was like it very much leaned on what's going to come next kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In our next segment, Top Books for Next Week, we talk about the number one comic we're looking forward to out next week. Forrest, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Captain America Marvel Snapshot number 1. Which is a sentence and also the title of a book. Written by Mark Russell and I think assisted by Kurt Busiek, with art by Ramon Perez. This is a one-shot in the Marvel series that's taking a look at Captain America helping out a wayward kid in Brooklyn after the detonation of the mind bomb. It seems topical. It's grappling with issues of trusting the state that has failed you and retaliating against the state in a way that makes for positive change, which I think is very topical, very poignant, was probably written well before the current events, but also lends itself incredibly well to them. I also think that Captain America is the perfect character to tackle those kinds of stories.
Mm. Yeah, when Mark Russell was on the show to talk about this, he talked a little bit about how he was looking into the history of New York and how run down it was.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, the neighborhoods were, like, forgotten.
And how it was, like, intentionally... How they were intentionally destroyed by the CIA and others, too.
Right.
COINTELPRO.
Yep. Yeah, I'm really pumped for this. I actually wanted to put it on mine, but I saw you did it, so I was like, I'll pick something else.
So, I do want to say that I hope that in the future, comics books, Bobulski doesn't get to say something like, "Did you enjoy Marvel's Captain America?" Like he did with Ta-Nehisi Coates. It's not about tokenism. It's about using the right characters to tell the right stories.
Right.
And this seems like it's a good opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I agree. And so far, Kurt Busiek's curating of this spotlight line has been great. Yes,
he gets the core ethos of, in particular, the main Marvel characters much better than most.
Right. And they're one-shots, so you can just pick it up and enjoy it.
Yeah, very cool.
My most anticipated book is also a one-shot. It's an anthology. It's Green Lantern, 80th Anniversary, 100-page, Super Spectacular, number one. Also a sentence. I really like the Joker Super Spectacular. They picked some fabulous creators to do that, like Tom Taylor and Scott Snyder and Jock did a story. Tinian did a story. This also has an insane amount of talent. Scenic Grace, Jeff Lemire, Ron Mars, Jeff Johns. Robert Venditti, they're all writing stories on this. Jim Lee, I think he might just do one of the covers, but Doug Mankey, David Finch, Nicola Scott, Neil Adams, Liam Sharp, they're all fabulous creators, and I'm excited to see what they come up with for their anthology stories. For $10, you get 80 pages of story, and sometimes some stories can be hit or miss, but you know what? That means, you know, you're going to have a good chance at least one of these will hit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. DC's banking on it, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, as we said in previous shows, these tend to sell like hotcakes. They're like usually in the top one or two books of the month.
And in revenue and issues sold, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think these are actually going to be worth anything. I think some people buy them thinking that.
Oh, you think people buy them speculating?
Yeah, exactly.
I think people buy them just to hop onto a book they haven't read in a while, but it's probably both.
Yeah. They tend to be very easy to pick up because they're not telling anything in continuity.
Sure. Yeah, right. Right, yeah, and that's a much easier proposition than 24 issues of an X-Men book.
Right. In our next segment, Judging by the Cover Junior, we're going to talk about our favorite cover art on a cover coming out next week.
Mm-hmm.
I picked, I'm not going to say it all, damn it, Green Lantern 80th Anniversary, number one, by Liam Sharp. There is a ton of decades covers. Different artists celebrate different eras of the character. And Liam Sharp actually got to do the main cover, which features all sorts of Green Lanterns on there. And it is insane. It is insanely realistic looking. There's some crazy, like, I don't know, space station, alien space station in the background. The Green Lantern logo is emblazoned, bright and shining behind the heads of some of these characters, and it just looks awesome. If you just took this and blew it up into poster size and put it in a movie theater and then just filmed people's reaction, I swear to God, people will be like, "I'm gonna watch that movie." Now you might be asking yourself, why are they in a movie theater that's closed? And the answer is they are ghosts.
And how far away are they from other people?
they're not breathing, don't worry.
Oh, okay, got it.
What is your favorite cover art of the week?
My favorite cover art out next week is... Okay, I want to get this right because it's the flip of the previous book that these two did. Batman the Smile Killer, which is an epilogue to Batman Joker Killer Smile, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino. The cover is a kind of double exposure of Batman looking down, sharp grizzled lines through his cowl and cape, and then a white and blue atop an all black void with a dot matrix image layered over the top. Andrea Sorrentino is the absolute best artist in the industry at evoking tone, at creating a very specific feeling that oftentimes aligns with my personal aesthetics or my personal taste. This reminds me very much of something you would see in like a David Fincher film. Fincher loves to obscure characters or have them be seen, especially when they're untrustworthy, through some layer of artifice, like looking at them through a window or through the reflection of a computer screen or something like that. And this is obviously meant to cast doubt or aspersions on Batman and his place in the story, and serves as a similar, it serves a similar effect. I know it's an epilogue to a story that I didn't particularly care for, but hey, Sorrentino makes good art.
It's a one shot too.
Yes. It's just the follow up.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how this plays out, because the series, the Joker series they did, Jeff Lemire and Sorrentino did, it definitely like felt like a, like you're trying to figure something out from the start. It like subverted what you thought you knew, and then there was a big reveal. So maybe this will do the same with Batman. Cool cover, man. Nice pick.
Thank you. Thanks, Andre.
Yeah, that's true. He deserves most of the thanks. Yes. He did all the work. In our next segment, we will be interviewing Thomas Krajewski and Jennifer Murrow about the DC OGN Primer. That's primer like in paint, because this superhero can get powers from different colors of paint. Sounds cool, right?
It is cool.
All right, I hope you enjoy. And on with me is Tom Krajewski and Jennifer Murrow. They have a new OGN from DC called Primer coming out June 23rd. Thank you so much for being on the show, guys.
Hi, hey, thanks for having us, man. Appreciate it.
It's a blast to have you on. DC's been good to us. We've had quite a few DC guests over the last year and a half, and I'm just so excited. I'm so pumped because I've had a chance to read Primer, and it's awesome. It's so good. And
cool. Thank you.
I love the feeling of reading like a book, you know, made for children, but also teens and also adults. I mean, there's so much in this that I found entertaining and interesting. On top of that, like, I love reading books like this where I go, can we please have this in an animated format?
Right? I know. Everyone says that. That's funny.
Send your letters to DC. We'll see what happens.
I will.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yo, of course. How long has Primer been in the works from idea to creation?
Just over 2 years. Jennifer and I, we had come up with a character, I think, just 2018, like 2 months before DC came to us and asked us if we had anything. So yeah, just over 2 years.
And you're both the writers, you're collaborating together on this. What was the writing process like?
Oh, man.
It's a can of worms.
Yeah. It was basically fun. I mean, I think, sometimes Jennifer and I, if we worked on projects in the past together, we'd probably bump heads a lot more.
Yeah.
But this kind of just came naturally. The writing process was mainly just us talking a lot about this. And then me, putting down the notes, and then Jen telling me that no, a 13-year-old girl would not say that. I see. I haven't done my research, but it was really just organic, you know.
I think it's. I've said this before that Tom is very good at first passes, and I like to, he likes to kind of do things in big chunks, and then I'll go and do a second and look through it and discuss it, and he'll go, oh yeah, I didn't think of that or what have you. So it was very back and forth. But Tom was always, I think, usually first pass on.
Yeah,
that, which is fine. And I think that worked great, which is nice because I didn't need to control the situation. So I think that's always helpful.
Yeah, and Jen, as she said before, she comes from like a development TV background, so she knows about how to like really like make things more fleshed out and not be so two-dimensional as I can probably tend to be. So, she offered a lot of great, stuff that I never would have thought of to to create a character that's actually much more realistic. So
yeah, you get that. Yeah. When you're reading it for sure.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And then the same with DC, you know, like they also, you know, we would go to them with some ideas and storylines, possible storylines for the first book. And then they would steer us in a different direction. We're like, oh, we never thought of that. We can do that. And they're like, yeah, try this. And they would like, they gave us a lot of freedom. Like, it's rare to get so much freedom, but like also while still being guided in a way where, you know, they are, you know, they're not just hands off. They let you be yourself creatively while also giving you just like actual ideas that make sense and really help. So in no way did it ever feel like we were forced to do something we didn't want to do. It was like, oh, wow, this makes sense. Let's try that. Yeah, let's do it. So overall, it was very easy writing experience.
It was a great development process. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. There you go. Sorry, I should have just said that instead of expanding on for 5 minutes about the.
No, it's fine. You know, while you were describing it, I kept thinking Mr. Miyagi, but then I thought, was Mr. Miyagi really hands off? Because he kind of made him do a lot of stuff like he didn't understand.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me started on Karate Kid, but
I know. Huge fan.
Oh, really? Are you reading the Cobra Kai IDW book?
Not yet. I didn't. I was unaware of it, but I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I love Cobra Kai. Love
nice.
Yeah.
What sparked the original pitch for this for Primer?
Gosh, that's a good question.
Well,
in terms of pitch, I mean.
Yeah.
Michelle Wells at DC, you know, they had this line that they were doing and I was like, oh my God, I think we have something perfect for this. I think that's sort of, we already had it, right, Tom? I mean,
Yeah, like Jennifer and I, like just over 2 years ago, had just been talking about how to create a new superhero and what would be really fun and different. And then, so we came up with that character and then just basically the rough character. And then, yeah, Michelle Wells knows Jennifer really well and then reached out to Jennifer. Hey, do you guys have any new characters? And we're like, wow, DC wants a new character? And so I think Jennifer soft pitched this idea to Michelle at like a party. Jennifer, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we've known each other for years. She's amazing at development and now, you know, running this for DC. And I think it was just like anything for the line. And we had an original character. We're like, can we do that? I think it was more along the lines of that or did they ask for original? The bottom line is what's nice is they were open to it. So that's all I remember. And that's shocking. So it was thrilling to be able to do that. That's
great.
Yeah.
Never skip a party. They're so helpful.
Jen is really good at like the socializing part of the business. I'm like, I'd rather just stay home and eat pizza and play video games. But she's really good at actually doing that stuff. So, you know, if she hadn't met Michelle, we wouldn't have this book. So, yeah, you're right. Never miss a party.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Primer tells a story that's very accessible to young readers and also relevant to older ones, I'd say. Can you speak to the creation of a cross-generational story like this?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I always personally wanted this to be for all ages. And when people read it, they seem to feel that way, which is really nice. Yeah. Because they're like, oh, so this is a kid's book? Is it a kid's line? I'm like, I guess technically yes, but I'm telling you, once you read it, you're going to be like, oh yeah, the whole family can read this. It's like one of those movies that you can take your kid to. It's that kind of thing. And that's what I always wanted to make sure personally. That was my personal goal to do that. It wasn't necessarily a mandate. That's just something I wanted to do. And I think that's what you're sort of asking, Tom. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's like, I wanted to create something kind of like that a family could, read together where everybody would love it. It's kind of like, you know, Harry Potter, you know, kids love it. Adults love it. They'll both go to those movies, buy those books, and they can read them together. I just, something about like bringing families together to kind of like, you know, bond over a superhero who isn't like, you know, super violent or whatever. So, I mean, I think it was just like, it just came together organically. Like, oh, let's just do this. Let's make it kind of sweet here. Let's give a little bit of edge here, but not enough to scare anybody off.
I think we write the way we write because we've been doing television for so long. And I've done adult and I've done kids television. I mean, I've done all of it. So you just know what, like adults will go, oh yeah, I get that. That's funny. You know, and we just kind of, I think there's just not enough of it out there these days. I think that's tough. I mean, I remember when Jumanji came out, the new movie, and people were like, oh my God, I can enjoy it with my kids. And it was just a rare thing that people hadn't had in a long time. And that triggered in my brain. And I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be great for everyone to enjoy. So that was my thing.
Yeah. I remember with like Shrek, there were jokes that were for the adults and then there were jokes for the kids.
Right.
But there's you can do both. Like both can laugh, right? I guess it's something about getting to the core of the character, but also like the humanity. I don't know. You could get really philosophical.
Yeah.
I have to say, about midway through the book, I don't want to spoil anything too much, but we see an extensive list of the colors and their powers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one notable reference is the color scarlet, allowing Ashley to make illusions. Are there any other secret references or nods in this book?
That's funny. That actually is completely by accident. If you're referencing a character from a different publisher, which I believe you are.
Of course.
Yeah, that was completely by accident. We did not mean that.
But that's really funny. Okay. That did not dawn on me.
Oh, that makes sense.
Are there any other nods, like legit nods, Tom? I'm trying to remember.
I mean, we generally kind of stayed away from it. You have a mention of Batman at one point. Mm-hmm. And if you look closely in Ashley's bedroom, Gretel, she did this on her own. It was really cool. She put a little poster hidden in the back of Teen Titans Tower.
Oh, cool.
And that was great because one of our original pitches to DC was like, oh, can the character Primer, you know, she discovers who she is, and in the end she joined Teen Titans. And, you know, they steer us away from that, which was great. But, and there's other little, you know, just cool DC things in there. But I wouldn't say, like, too many. We kind of just focused on, like, a complete original world in a way, but still nice. Set in DC. Yeah.
Yeah.
In DC cool. Universe.
I love the costume at the end. First of all, it's a great journey where this character, you know, she's got a difficult life. She finds these abilities, but at the same time, she finds, you know, empowerment in herself. And then by the end, we've got a hero, a superhero on our hands.
Right.
And with a superhero comes a superhero costume, which I loved the design and idea behind.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Like, yeah. The spoiler alert is it's so funny because the whole time you think this is going to be her outfit forever. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you're like, oh, there's this awesome whole thing. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love cool superhero costumes. So, you know, we just kind of want to make her iconic. So she can still go out and be a superhero without that costume, which we'll definitely do in the future. When she doesn't have her costume around, she'll have her paints. So she can still kind of explore looking different. But the costume thing, we just wanted to think of something cool that, you know, yeah, if you saw that costume, you'd be like, oh, Primer.
And Tom, you actually designed it. That's the one thing you literally designed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Gretel, our artist, who is amazing. Like she did all these different variations of cool superhero costumes and they were awesome. And I'm like, let's do mine. No, she like as a kid, here's the thing. Like I wanted to grow up to be a comic book artist. Like I would draw superheroes and all the time. Like I just was not very good at it, but I loved cool costumes. So when Gretel started doing this costume, I did a rough version of what you see in the end with the giant P on her chest that goes down her leg. But Gretel made it look way better than the actual design I did. But that was, you know, but yes, mainly I did inspire that. But
I mean, you just had something set in your mind. And it's funny because I was like, I don't know. And you were really, it's one thing you were really set on. Which is awesome because you never make any kind of like demands and you didn't even demand this, but it ended up looking fantastic. So it really just worked.
It's funny.
We barely tweaked it. It really was awesome that you got to do that. So that was really cool. And it looks great.
Yeah, I cannot wait for people to see like how that costume works in future books. And also like, you know, as I was talking about with Jen earlier, it's like I love costumes when, you know, superheroes' costume changes, like when Batman's costume slightly changes from book to book because it's different artists. Like I'm looking forward to seeing maybe how we give Primer different versions of that same costume or even just completely different costumes. I just love cool designs. So, but yeah, that costume, man, I cannot wait for you to see what happens with it.
Ooh, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I have to ask, I don't know why this question came to me, but color theory. How would Ashley Rayburn do with color theory?
Ooh.
Like the, you know, the process of like what colors mean.
I mean, that's interesting. I think she would learn it from Kitsch because he happens to, you know, that's what he sort of does. And I think he'd be ridiculous and fun about it in a very kitsch way. So I think that's how she, I think she'd learn more at home than she would at school. Okay. In terms of that kind of thing, in terms of the art part, because yeah. I think Kitsch knows how to reach her than a lot. But then again, you never know. Maybe it'll be an awesome art teacher. You know, that's something we haven't explored. Mm. You know, that would be really cool. That'd be interesting. Maybe Kitsch and that person doesn't get along, and that could be also humor there and comedy there. And they have totally different styles. So there's a lot of ways. But I think she'd be very Ashley about it. That's what I think. Yeah.
I'll have to agree with Jen because I was like, what the heck is color theory? Like, sure.
There's some heavier themes in this book. There's an adoption, of course. There's an incarcerated fellow in the book. When you're finding these themes, do you lead with the themes or does the story come first? When do you start thinking about things like adoption being an important part of the story?
I think that was early in development, Tom, right? I mean, I think that was... I mean, I think themes are always early on. I mean, you kind of really, I like to world build in a very, you know, solid way before we really dive in. Because if you work the other way, things can fall apart very quickly. So you have to be careful of that. So I think that, wasn't that pretty early on, Tom? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, I think personally, like coming up with a theme of, I've always just loved stories about people who think they're meant to be something else and don't believe they can be something greater. I mean, I think that's very relatable to a kid. Like I was told I was too short. I couldn't do something. I, you know, realized I could eventually. So I think the theme that we came up with in this was pretty early on. Cause I wanted to like empower kids who read this, who might relate to Ashley. Cause she really feels like she's going to grow up to be a bad person because of her father.
And people are judging her, prejudging.
Yeah, exactly. People do judge her in the book without knowing her. So that theme came pretty early on. And I mean, it was just a very simple theme and, you know, that we could do without being too dark, you know, like, hey, how do you become a hero? How do you, you know, face your inner demons and, you know, and not listen to other people who tell you what you can and can't do.
Yeah. When I'm reading a book like this, where I know younger readers are going to be picking it up more than, you know, a conventional superhero comic.
Right.
And I see these themes, it actually makes me, like, I don't know, more invested in the story, more interested. Because I know, my day job is actually working with pre-K and K kids. So I'm, like, thinking about, like, how this book might affect a younger kid. Because they're seeing, like, a character like them and, you know, their age, they're a younger kid. And seeing, like, maybe a scenario that they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Right. That would be great. Yeah. That's a good goal. I mean, I hope that, I really hope that happens. I mean, that's kind of a lot of the point of this, right, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. Just, I mean, any comic book I read as a kid is like, I want to grow up to be that superhero because they're, you know, they're so like altruistic and like selfless and they want to just be, you know, helpers. So, I mean, that's what I love for people to take away. It's like, oh, the theme is one of the many themes is just be a good person, help others.
And you also don't have to be perfect, which is nice.
Yes, that's yes, thank you, Jen. You can, another
when you're. When you're crafting an OGN like this, is there any limits to how many pages you can write? With Primer, was there a case where you wanted to write another chapter or maybe you had too many pages?
I think they originally asked us to do a 130-page book or maybe 120. And then we, Jennifer and I had more to say. So they were, I think it's eventually a 134-page comic and they were totally fine with that. Yes.
Well, it was supposed to be a little smaller, but I think we added
The thing is, like, I like long action scenes. I think, you know, originally most of the action scenes in there were probably like 5 pages longer. And DC was like, can we just cut those down? And Jen was like, yeah, they're a little too long. And I'm like, yeah, but she's kicking butt. So, that helped keep it shorter, but
it flows better. I mean, it flows. Look, they know what they're doing, and it's spot on. And I mean, they absolutely let us do emotional beats that they felt were worth extra pages.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, if we could, we would have kept writing. I mean, we have a lot of more stories to tell for her. So
hopefully, that's fingers exciting. Crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys started? You don't have to answer. Have you guys started a sequel yet? Started writing it or anything?
Well, I think. DC definitely wants to see how the book sells first.
Right.
And so they haven't asked us to do anything because rightfully so they're going to want to see what happens. But we have... Personally, we have plots for the next 2 books to make a trilogy.
If it goes.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
If this book ends up doing well, will you be kicking yourself if you didn't buy a lot of stock in paint companies?
Oh.
That is a joke question. You do not have to answer that question.
Yeah, that's like insider trading or something, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, right? Exactly.
Man, yeah. Well, hey, fingers crossed. You know, all the Crayola company does very well, I guess. I don't even know who owns them, but there you go.
You're right, though. It's like, yeah, I mean, whatever makeup company makes body paints, absolutely, we should start investing in that now. I mean,
well, I give Sephora enough money as it is. So, yeah, I'll work with them. That'll be great.
Oh my God, what if Sephora ends up with like a primer, like makeup kit? Like,
I would lose my mind.
Shoot. Cardboard cutout of Ashley, right? In the front of the store?
Oh my God, I'd lose my mind. Oh great, now I have to talk to DC about that. That would be awesome.
that would be
fantastic. Like, dream come true. Especially as a kid, you know, I had the Barbie head that used to put makeup on it and stuff like that. So yeah, absolutely. And we had those like color, I forget what they were called, but like you'd scrape on them and the image would show up on the breast.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you remember those things.
I do.
Color it in.
Ancient science.
Like, yeah. They're called fashion plates. All of that stuff would be fantastic to be able to do. So yes, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. Jen and I do talk about that. Like, one of our big dreams would be to see a kid cosplaying as Primer, you know, with some cool body paints on. You know, we were hoping to do Comic-Con this year, which is unfortunately canceled, but that's what we were. I think that would really hit me the hardest in the heart, like the best way, is to see a kid actually dressed up, or anybody dressed up like Primer, anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to get a bunch of like 11-year-old kids, and then you're probably going to get a couple overweight 40-year-old guys.
Why not, man?
Which could be hilarious.
For it, man. They're going to look amazing in wigs. They're going to have awesome wigs, I'm telling
you. You're so right. You're so right.
I feel like we're going to get a lot of complaints from parents who are like, my kid went into the garage and grabbed paint.
Oh, gosh. You're right.
So maybe we should start selling body paints right now with the book. Right. Like, yeah, maybe use these instead of your parents, you know, Sherwin Williams.
Right. Yeah. Well, easy to clean. It comes off. It comes off. So it'll be okay. As long as they don't drink it, that's fine.
Exactly. It's true.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that was it. Yeah.
When I was reading this, I kept thinking, like, when I was very little, this was the kind of daydream I would have, where like something very simple, like a crayon, could turn you into a superhero.
Yeah.
Did you have to tap into anything of any part of your youth or anything that you might have dreamed of when you were little, or is that your day to day?
For me, that I'm just a giant kid. For me, it was just easy to tap into that. She can speak for herself, but
no. I mean, I'd like to hear. That'd be great.
I think you're smart enough to be more serious when you need to be in situations. Right. I'm like Mr. Goofball. I don't take anything seriously. I just want to have some fun.
But that's what's perfect
characters.
About us is that like
she reins me in
overboard, and I will balance that out, which is and it'll still be fine, which is why Primer turned out the way she turned out, because there was some other ideas Tom had early on, and I was like, no, we shouldn't really do that way, and it's silly. So we kind of balanced it out to what it is now. So it actually is. Thank God you're goofy, and I am goofy adjacent.
Yeah, nice. It's like,
which is
she's right. Like, I think about like action and cool comedy stuff all the time. Like that opening action scene in the book where she saves the plane. I think I came up with that like 2 years probably earlier, just thinking about it, listening to an AC/DC song. I was like, what if a superhero is doing this while the song's playing? While that's happening, the superhero catches the plane. Then while that beat comes on, the superhero's, you know, landing with the plane. So it's just like, I just think of that kind of silly stuff. I don't know.
That worked out great.
It sounds like the energy you had, you know, that's so important in crafting something creative and original, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of creativity, many folks seem to be struggling right now, or a lot of folks are struggling right now because of the pandemic to get their creative juices flowing. Do you have any tricks or means of getting your creativity flowing?
For me, I get out. Well, honestly, for me, I get out in the green, getting outside, at least in my backyard, if you have that ability, or if someone has a balcony, or I mean, a little garden, a little something growing has helped me personally. And ironically is related to, you know, the brightness and the color. It's just, it wakes you up. So that has helped. I don't know if that would help everyone, but it definitely just, you know, I don't think fresh air and green is going to hurt that. So that has helped me. Tom, I don't know about you.
Dave, like, this has been, like, incredibly hard for me because, like, yeah, it's completely stifled my creativity. And I'm a guy that works from home anyways. I've been doing it for 13 years, so it's like, right. You shouldn't. But, like, it was just such a depressing thing that I don't know. I just take a lot of walks.
I mean, walks. I mean, you're the walks. Yeah, you're all about the walks. Absolutely.
And I work out. But, like, honestly, what's been getting me through this pandemic is coming up for ideas for future Primer books. So that actually didn't
stifle my... That's useless for other people, but yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Just think of ideas for sequels to the series.
If they want to do fanfic, we can do fanfic. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So well, that's
there's some... Fun, yeah. There's definitely some science to, like, right, like, people get their best ideas when they're in a shower. Like, doing some other physical activity that separates your mind from thinking, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. I agree. And that's pretty much what you're saying. Exactly. Shower, garden, walk, do something. Shift. It's about shifting focus. I mean, that has helped. And sometimes it doesn't work. And also, people don't have to punish themselves that they're not at this time. And that's, you know, it's like, maybe it'll be the only time you will ever have a break from using your brain. So just, you know, don't be so hard on yourself, which also helps it flow too sometimes.
Yeah. People just get down and then they get stuck in their own heads. Kind of.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
There's a couple questions we ask people every so often. Like, we have a new question we kind of cycle through, and I swear to God, this is a question I've been asking everyone. It's not just for this interview, but what did you want to be when you were little?
Jennifer?
Oh, I wanted to be Wonder Woman.
Nice.
Oh, but like Linda Carter's 1970s Wonder Woman. Like, absolutely in the playground. Like, that's second grade. We tried to have contests jumping, who could jump the highest and jump over logs and things, because she always did that in the show. And so that was pretty solid. That was pretty solid early on. Even like, I mean, every Halloween, I had the terrible plastic smock, and you draw the red star on your forehead with lipstick. So it was the whole thing. I even think my Skype symbol is me dressed as Wonder Woman as a little kid.
It is.
My
little
bathing suit.
So yeah, that's a long time. Tom, what about you?
I'll try to make this quick. Popeye, Indiana Jones, Ghostbusters, Batman. I want to be everything but a real human being, you know, with a real, anything that wasn't a desk job where I could be a hero. Absolutely. But I did love Popeye and Batman and the Ghostbusters. If I could still be a Ghostbuster to this day, I would be doing that.
Absolutely. Nice.
That's fun. I like it. You both have very fun answers.
Did you want like real answers? Like,
no,
mine's real. Mine's totally real.
Well, yeah. Okay. I meant realistic. Like,
that's good.
I can't be a Ghostbuster. You can't. As much as I'd love for you to
I don't know. Woman. Don't cut yourself short. I'm sure it's possible. And I mean, one step closer, I mean, if you just like write, you know, Ghostbuster comics or Wonder Woman comics, you guys are that much closer to being that, right?
There you go. Well, I got to write for Wonder Woman for television, so that was really awesome.
Yeah,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, which was a dream come true. So that was like, okay, I checked that box off, which was fantastic. But honestly, I mean, if in terms of realistic, I've always wanted to come to California. I remember being 11 years old and like crying, wanting to come here because I knew things were made here. And my mother was like, you know, from Italy, she wasn't born here. And it was the most bizarre request from a child to want to magically do this. And I made it happen. So I'm very grateful that I'm stubborn.
Yeah, you know.
So that's the realistic answer. Wonder Woman and actually being stubborn.
You are stubborn.
Yeah.
More realistically, like I did. Did I say this earlier? I don't remember. But I did actually want to grow up to be a comic book artist.
Oh, cool.
Like, that was my So like that, and also an actor, and then but.
And you did. You were a child actor. You did that.
Light child actor.
Get out.
Yeah,
nothing crazy. But,
okay, can I just say, Tom? When I was preparing the questions with my co-host, who's not here, obviously. I was like, doesn't Tom look like Peter Sarsgaard?
you're looking at some really doctored image of me, whatever that is, whatever filter they're using. I want to get that. But yeah, thanks.
That's
no, I used to get like, I don't know, who did I used to get? I used to get Tom Hanks when I was younger. I was like, oh, I guess that's good enough. But yeah, no, thank you. I'll take it.
Are there any comic books you guys are reading right now?
I was reading Red Sonja recently, which was awesome. That
by,
was probably,
Mark Russell?
Yeah, that was the most recent thing. Tom, what about you?
I'm reading all the books in our line right now of the DC graphic novels that are coming out, like the Superman Smashes the Clan,
right.
Which
it's so good.
It's so good. And didn't you have Gene on? Like, I think
we
I
did. Yeah,
heard your episode of that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
about a month ago.
Yeah. And so like all those, and it's kind of really cool to see like what else DC is doing in this line, and it's right. just really kind of cool to see characters being portrayed in different you know, classic DC characters in different ways. So I'm loving them. Yeah.
I have to mention this. It's like an infinity mirror. You guys mentioned Mark Russell and Gene. Gene was on, and he said one of his favorite writers right now is Mark Russell. He was on a week prior. So now we are continuing this mirror effect.
So now that I mentioned the Ghostbusters, you're going to have Bill Murray on next week. And then
Dan Aykroyd's going to be on in a week and a half to talk about his new comic book, Batman and the Joker.
Right.
No.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. You know, I was just watching the Indiana Jones movies. I find myself watching old movies from the 80s to feel better about all this stuff going on. And
yeah.
Dan Aykroyd's in the second. He's in Raiders.
Yeah. No, he's in like Temple of Doom.
Or Temple of Doom. You're right. Temple of Doom.
He is?
Second one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one that gets Indy on the plane. He's like, Mr. Jones. He puts
oh,
on the
there's no close up. Oh my gosh, I forgot. Oh my gosh.
They should have had him in Crystal Skull. It would have made the movie 50 times
better. Oh my gosh. Yes, they should have. That would have been amazing.
They didn't think of it.
They didn't. Okay, so our last segment of the show every week is Off Topic Top Shelf. I'm going to ask you guys the simple question. What are you into right now that's not comics related? It could be anything. It could be books, movies, food, anything.
Oh my gosh. Well, for me, it is gardening. I have been growing I'm in survivalist mode going like, do I need to have someone deliver vegetables? Let's grow an entire hydroponic inside and garden outside. So that is totally unrelated, but super useful because I eat a lot. So there you go.
You don't eat a lot. I mean, I love my video games and I love my movies and TV shows. Like, I'm very plain and boring that way, but I love my open world video games, you know, like Fallout 4 and all that kind of stuff, Borderlands. I'm just a big kid, like I said, so you're not going to get any kind of deep answer from me. But What We Do in the Shadows, that TV show, that's a great one.
Oh, it's so good. I guess it's the finale this week.
Is it? Yeah.
I started as well, so yeah.
It's just so brilliant, and that's the kind of comedy that like I really gravitate to. It's like it's really smart, also can be very stupid. The characters can be stupid.
Right.
So yeah, really, really loving that one, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show. Primer's out June 23rd. Go pick it up. It is very, very good.
Yay,
thanks, Dave. Appreciate it, man.